It's time to Talk It Over, starring Diane Diamond, Lee J. Berman, and Louise Palanker. Give us a call at 888-531-7171. Email us at talkitover@gmail.com. Join us online at talkitoverradio.com. Because we're ready to talk it over.
We are. We're ready to talk it over. We are the show about conflict and resolution and all the stuff that happens in between. We are all about that. I am here in the studio, and I am Louise Palanker. And on the West Coast, we've got professional mediation phenom Lee J. Berman. How are you doing, Lee J.?
I'm great, Louise. How are you today?
Excellent. All right. And on the East Coast, we've got our intrepid journalistic Wonder Woman, Diane Diamond. How are you, Diane?
I'm great. I want the Wonder Woman music underneath me, please.
Okay, as long as you have keep wearing your cape, because
yeah, and my big bracelets.
It's
yeah,
stylish. Yes, we've had all kinds of stuff going on in the news this week. What's caught your attention, Diane? You're always on the beat.
Yeah, I am always on the beat. Well, you know me. It's got to be OJ. All things OJ.
All things OJ.
I started covering OJ Simpson back in, 1995. And, of course, he had this little kerfluffle in Las Vegas. Yeah, just 12 felony counts, you know. But that guilty verdict, you know, I have to tell you, while I was hoping it would be guilty because the evidence was so out there, he was on videotape and audio tape doing exactly what the prosecution said, I wasn't sure he was going to be convicted. Anyway, I really wondered what went on in that juror room, you know, all the personal conflict in there.
I think I know, Diane. I think OJ's Teflon is finally wearing off. Like, you know, he used a Brillo pad on it too many times, and now he's just got the steel. He's just going to have to take it, and it's going to stick this time.
Well, I think his Teflon wore off a long time ago, and he spent basically 13 years as a public pariah. And I think this is my theory about high profile cases is that the jury is they're just reluctant, even whether it's on a conscious level or a subconscious level, they're reluctant to be the people who say, okay, I'm putting this extremely very famous person behind bars. And that's what happened in all of the high-profile cases, in my opinion. This time, after 13 years of just being public enemy number one, they were proud to raise their hands and saying, we're going to get to be the people who put this guy. Because I think jurors are concerned about how am I going to be perceived for the rest of my life.
You might have a point there. I've covered so many court cases and talked to lots of jurors afterwards. But in OJ's case, you know, in L.A., back in the 90s, mid-90s, almost an all-black jury, what they called jury nullification. They just didn't care what the prosecution said. It was, the government after this famous black man. Las Vegas juries, I have found, my expertise is that they're way different than L.A. La La Land jurors. They've heard every BS story any tourist who's ever come to Vegas can give them, and they don't buy all these side explanations. You know, they don't want the conflict of your baggage. They just say right, wrong, good, evil. And I was interested to see that deliberation. Really? 13 straight hours. Lee J., can you imagine the conflict in that room? 13 straight hours.
It sounds like one of my mediations. It 13 hours with trying to get 12 people to consensus without a professional facilitator in the room, it has got to just be brain damage. I can't imagine being in that room and having people argue and debate and probably scream and yell. It sounds like 12 Angry Men. It sounds like the movie. But 13 straight hours is a lot of deliberation. And my understanding, you know, the way they came back was they finally got all on the same page, or enough of them did. And I can't imagine the process. I would probably have been outside the glass of the room banging my head against the wall, wanting in to go, wait, do you hear what he's saying? Can't you understand what he...
Actually, 13 straight hours wasn't too bad because there were two defendants and both of them were found guilty on 12 counts. So they had to go through 24 counts. So 13 hours, in the scheme of things, that ain't too bad. And Lee J., I hear you had a little... brush with the court recently that's given you new insight.
Yep, I got to sit in the back of the courtroom for 4 straight weeks and witness a trial where my brother was suing somebody and listen to the the most incredible things that go on in a courtroom that I think most people don't realize. You know, in media, I don't get to see it very often, in the inside of a courtroom, by the way. For the listeners who don't know about what I do, as a mediator, people come to me in lieu of going to the court. So I sit in the comfort of my own office, and the lawyers and the parties come in, put them in separate rooms, and we try and solve it there. And when I'm doing that basically every day, I don't ever go down to the courthouse and see how they do what they do. And this was a great reminder of the pain and the agony and the excruciatingness that a trial is. I watched my brother and this couple that he was suing in a major, major lawsuit sit across the courtroom from each other and, you know, sneer at each other. And I watched them both break down on the stand, and then all the mundane, you know, objections to every question and going through the accountant's reports one line at a time. It's excruciating. And I'm so glad that we can do everything we can on this show to help keep people out of that situation.
And how was your brother after everything turned out the way it did?
It didn't come out in his favor, as you can hear in Louise's voice. And it was stunning. I mean, I sat there for 4 weeks and watched this judge. I watched every muscle in his face, and every time he leaned in, and every time he sat back, and every time he looked like he was sleeping. And I was convinced that he was going to rule in my brother's favor. And when they finished the closing arguments, both lawyers said, okay, Your Honor, so I assume you want to take this under consideration. He said, no, I'm ready. And he pulled over a legal pad and started reading his verdict that he had apparently prepared the night before. And when he read his decision, my jaw literally dropped. And I walked around like a zombie for 4 days afterwards because I was just so stunned at this outcome where all the evidence was on my brother's side. And I'm not being biased.
Well, but I mean, now you are talking from a relative's viewpoint.
Of course.
And, but, you know, the law is very different than, and I'm not a lawyer, I don't pretend to be, but, you know, the law, the way the law sees a situation is very different than the way a regular lay person, even a professional mediator like you, Lee J, would see the situation. That's why people really need some tools.
It's true.
Some mediation tools when they go into a courtroom to, you know, how to behave, how to act, how to dress, how to, you know, keep eye contact or not.
But Diane, it goes even further. You know, the law, yes, does twists and turns, and this thing got way more complex as the trial went on. But this was even one where we look at the other party he was suing and thought, this person is a mess. She's crying. She's going to fall apart on the stand. She's going to be this or that. And the judge decided at the end that he found her credible. And we were all just stunned. And the people who come into my mediations, none of them think for a minute that the judge or the jury isn't going to believe them. And they don't realize it, even when they're right and even when they're telling the truth, doesn't mean that the judge or jury is going to say, yeah, I feel your pain.
Or that the law will go along with your all your heartfelt statements.
I was going to say, this is the flip side. This is like the law was in his favor, but emotionally, the judge sided with the woman because he felt pity for her, and it was just hard to watch.
Wow.
But it's just so unpredictable, and that's the lesson that I want to share with our listeners, is that you don't have any idea what's going to come out of that process, no matter how certain you are going in. And like the old saying goes, being inside of a court of law is about the worst, most dangerous place you can be, because they can take more from you there than they can out of your wallet in a dark alley.
Yeah, so you might as well go to a mediator. Hey, if you have a personal conflict and need some advice, give us a call here, 888-531-7171, 888-531-7171, or you could just drop us an email at talkitover@gmail.com.
And next up on the Talk It Over phone lines, we've got Linda.
Linda, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How can we help you talk something over? What's going on in your life?
This is a neighborly problem. I have a 7-year-old daughter, Lucy. She was out riding her bicycle the other day, two-wheeler bicycle, and two of the neighborhood boys knocked her off her bicycle.
Aww.
Her arm was badly bruised. We had x-rays. There was no break, but there was a lot of trauma damage, and she's her arm's in a sling. I thought the neighborly thing to do would be to call the mothers of the boys and tell them what happened. And I was the one put on the defensive. both the mothers asked their sons, and their sons denied that they had done it. And the one woman scolded me. She said, "Well, you shouldn't let your daughter play with boys anyway."
Oh,
my God. My gosh.
And
what decade is she living in?
I see. I mean, we're not dear friends, but we've been friendly, and I see them on the street, and I really feel very hostile.
Push them over.
No.
Why didn't I think of that?
I can see Linda hiding in the bushes as the boys go riding by on their bikes.
Sticking out her
leg. Now, Linda, how long ago did this happen? How long have you had to see them in the neighborhood and try to not throw daggers their way?
It's over 2 weeks, I would say.
Oh gosh, Lee J, what do you do if you try to talk it over and they don't want to talk?
You know, here's the thing. Anytime you have a conversation with somebody and it ends in a way that leaves you feeling incomplete, you really have to follow up on it, because it's just going to keep eating you, Linda, alive until you can do something about it. So what I think you need to do is contact this woman again and invite yourself over for a cup of coffee, or invite her over for a cup of coffee, and say, you know, this isn't just about the kids, it's about us. Because I felt like, however you felt, and fill in that blank, but I felt like you didn't believe me or something like that when I told you about this. And you need to understand, I saw what I saw, and I'm trying to help you, since they're, you know, you don't want your boys to grow up that way. And, you know, also, obviously, we're talking to the little girl about how to, you know, what she should do in a situation like that. But as grown-ups, you and I have to cut each other some slack and the benefit of the doubt here, because, you know, I was there, I saw it, and I'm just trying to report to you what happened. And I don't want this to come between our friendship, but I didn't like the way that you responded when I called you on this. How does that sound to you?
Tough.
Mm-hmm. Any tougher than glaring at her every day that you go out the door, Linda?
No, of course not. And I know you're right. It's just going to take a huge chunk of courage to do it.
So what would make it easier for you, Linda?
A bottle of wine.
Linda, I like you.
Why is it so difficult for people to say what they're entitled to say, Lee J? Why is it, or Diane? We're so protective of our kids, and obviously these women are being protective of their kids' honor, even as false as it is. They're not wanting to admit, you know, perhaps my son did something that he shouldn't have, or I was not a good mom, or he wouldn't be doing. I mean, everyone's being so protective, and we love our kids so much, but why is it that when it comes to our kids, we're almost less likely to stick up for ourselves than when it comes to ourselves?
Let's test it. Linda, I'm guessing that the thing that keeps you from going and having this conversation with her is the fear of what she's going to respond with.
Right. I don't want animosity coming from her.
Yeah.
Even though I feel tremendous animosity toward her.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because
that's
the animosity
ironic.
You feel toward her, it even though you think you're masking it, it will seep out your pores. You'll see her at a dinner party, or someone will mention her name at a dinner party, and you'll wince. And the message will come out about how you feel about her until it's resolved, and it will continue to fester inside of you until either time heals it or you finally do something about it, at which point a lot of folks, and you don't sound like you would do this, Linda, but a lot of folks would then overreact because it's been festering for so long. So the healthy way to do it is to sit her down and say, look, I just want us to be friends. I don't know what happened on the phone the other day. I'm just trying to help. And you know, if you go in a way that is as disarming as you can be with her and give her no reason to jump up and down, first of all, then you know if she does jump up and down that she's just being irrational. And second, you're liable to sort of ratchet her blood pressure down a couple of notches so she can hear you better and respond better to you. And I would do everything that you can, Linda, in that conversation just to stay as calm and unoffensive as you can. And if she starts getting to you, then it's okay to say, hey, you know what, maybe this wasn't a good idea. I really thought that we could have a calmer conversation about this, but now I'm getting upset too, and I don't want that. So maybe we ought to just...
So here's that cup of coffee right in your face, lady. No, don't listen to me, Linda. Now, you know, Lee J, what you're saying is really good. In other words, Linda, if you don't say something now, as hard as that would be, and you let it fester and seep out your pores, ooh, I like that description, Lee J, then it's going to be harder later.
I know you're right.
And the other thing, Linda, is you want to do this well. you have control over it if you initiate it now. But if you wait until later and it just bursts forth when you don't expect it, you're liable not to handle it as well as you'd like to. Then you'll be upset with yourself.
Okay. I know you're right. I know you're right, and I'm going to do it. I am, and I thank you so much.
You're all right.
Call us back and let us know what happens.
Okay, if I'm able to.
Be interested. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
But Linda, don't ride your bike over there.
Yeah. Oh, poor lady. You know, I read something in the news lately. As you say, Louise, I'm always on the prowl for news items. In the news was something very similar to Linda's problem. You see, she has the ability to nip it in the bud now. This article I read was the title of it was A Punch in the Facebook. And it was about a couple of young men on that social networking site, Facebook, who looked up a guy that they had been mad at for 5 years.
Wow.
5 years they held this grudge. They looked him up on Facebook. They found him. Now, this guy, his name is Adam Lynn, apparently just beat the you-know-what out of one of these kids after a racquetball game in school 5 years ago. So they find Adam Lynn. They invite him to a reunion. Let's go have a drink and, you know, have a reunion. And he thinks, wow, isn't that nice? Aren't these guys nice? So he goes to the local watering hole. And they beat the crap out of him.
Wow.
Whoa.
They beat the crap out of him. After 5 years, they got their payback.
But aren't these guys like 12?
Well, no, they're like in their late 20s, early 30s. Isn't that something?
Wow. I actually have a personal story that's similar to Linda's, but it's kind of flashes forward. When I was a kid, maybe around 11 or something, there was a boy named Wayne, who lived across the street, and you know, sometimes the boys would let me play with them, and sometimes they wouldn't. It would depend on their mood. But one time, I went over there and I climbed up on the jungle gym, and he knocked me off, and I broke my arm. And he,
wow,
yeah, and he also was.
That's more than a crush. That's love.
Yeah, you know. Well, you know, clearly, it's one of those situations where, you know, time went on. And then, you know, his mother and my parents were sort of, you know, acquaintances. And the mother, I guess, went into my father's store. And he said, oh, why don't you, you know, you have a cup of coffee? Because he had the kind of store where there was always coffee there for the customers. And she said, oh, I have to go. Wayne's in the car. This is, you know, 20 years later. And my dad said, well, you know, tell Wayne to come in. I'd love to see Wayne. And she said, oh, he doesn't want to come in ever. You know, he's just embarrassed ever since he pushed Louise off the jungle gym.
Oh,
for 20 years.
Yeah, so I have completely forgotten it. But this guy goes around harboring it. And maybe if the mothers had sat down and had to face, okay, this did happen. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. He wouldn't be going around still. You know, maybe the bully sometimes suffers worse than the victim. I don't know.
In some cases. Go ahead, Diane.
I was going to say, and maybe with these boys with the Facebook punch story, if 5 years ago when they were in school and had a fight, if some grown-up had brought them together to say, now, come on, you guys. It was a silly racquetball game. Knock it off. It might have ended right there.
Yeah.
You know, it's when we don't talk it over that we get the biggest problems sometimes.
That's just it. I mean, this young guy would not have harbored it for 20 years had he sat down at some grown-up, set you down together, and had he been able to say to Louise, I'm sorry. And mm-hmm. I think that's why back in the 50s, parents used to grab you by the ear or something and parade you down the block, you know, Beaver, and say you're sorry, you know, to Eddie Haskell or whatever. And
it was the other way around.
Yeah, of course.
You're not watching the program.
Of course. But that's why they made us say, I'm sorry. Because they wanted us to relieve that guilt and not carry it around for all those years.
It's consequences.
Yeah.
If this, then that. And
exactly.
Then and move on. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. Well, hey, everyone, you're listening to Talk It Over Radio. You can join in our conversation. Give us a call, 888-531-7171. If you can't get through, for goodness sake, just leave us a message. That's 888-531-7171 or email us at talkitover@gmail.com.
And also, Diane, we are on MySpace.
And, oh, and
we don't want to be called over to a bar to get beaten up, but we are on MySpace.
So we won't join Facebook
and LinkedIn.
we are on myspace.com/talkitoverradio, and we would love to be your MySpace friend.
And you know, can I just say one more thing? Diane said, if we don't answer leave a message. We haven't had a good voicemail from a caller in a couple of weeks. They can leave a message on there. We'll play it and we'll talk about it on the show if they don't want to call us during the recording.
We have a lot of people asking if our refrigerator is running. I'm not sure the conflict there, but...
Or if you have whatever it is in a can.
In a can.
What was that?
That is Prince Albert, yes.
That's it.
All right. Matt, let's go to the Tuck It Over telephones.
You've got it. We've got Jen on the line.
Hi.
Jen, hi. You're on the line.
I'm on the line. So I have a situation that I need some help with. My boyfriend and I moved in together about 2 months ago. And ever since we've moved in together, he has been playing his video games nonstop.
Did you know this about him before you moved in together?
Well, I mean, I knew that he liked them, but, like, he used to work and stuff. And it's been, like, he'll wake up in the morning and he'll turn on the Xbox and I'll go to work. And then I'll come home from work and he's still sitting in the same place playing the games. And then I'll go to sleep and I wake up the next morning. And
is there a stain underneath him?
Oh, Louise, only you would ask something like that.
Jen, does he not have a job?
You know, he works in the entertainment industry, and so things haven't been that busy for him lately. But, you know, it's a little disheartening because he's not really doing anything but sitting here playing, and I'm getting frustrated. And I don't know how to approach it because we share a living space together.
You know, Jen, I think what you need to do is move back out so that he has to put down the Xbox, get off the couch, get in the car, and drive over to come see you.
Now, video games are there. That's a type of addiction, isn't it? You're kind of checking out from life.
It's an obsessive compulsive personality type that makes people sort of just keep playing, and then yes, it does sort of put you in this altered state of reality.
It's interesting that this guy would have a girlfriend that is great, like Jen, and then be able to move in with her, which is quite exciting for a young man, and then check out. Like, he's almost afraid, okay, oops, this means I have to grow up.
You know, Louise said exactly the right word. It's about being afraid, I'll bet. Jen, how comfortable is he being a grown-up with you?
I don't know. That's the problem, is that he seemed really, like, when we started dating, we dated for a year before we moved in together, and he would go to work, and he, you know, I don't know if he lied when he said that the days that he wasn't working, he was doing things, but it just, you know, I don't know. Well, I mean, we used to be able to go and do things, and now it's like I sit there and I watch him play his video game.
Wow.
There's another piece to this, though. The male ego. Men are largely driven, and some women have this component, too. Many, for all I know, but I can talk about men from experience. Men tend to pin their self-image to their work. And if they're not working, or they're not successful at work, or they get fired at work or something, then their self-image can crater. And this could be a situation where he's feeling so bad about being out of work that the video game sphere is an escape for him. It's a place for him to go and not have to look you in the eye. And he probably fears, like, oh my gosh, she's going to ask me if I went and applied for jobs today, or if I, you know, that, or
yeah,
she's going to tell me I have
really
to be a waiter.
Busy. Yeah, if I look busy, she's not going to ask me that. Right?
Let me ask you this, Jen. In the game, does he play as a lawyer?
No, he plays Star Wars games.
Oh, okay.
Oh my gosh. You know, Jen, I think what Lee J said is very telling, because I was thinking, when my husband and I have an argument, first thing I do is I go to my computer. I'm busy. I got to look up my MySpace, and I got to go on Facebook, and I'm very busy. Don't talk to me. You know, I guess my point is, have you tried to shut off the set and sat in front of him, you know, blocking the set, and said, we have to talk? Have you tried to talk it over?
I've tried, but I've made comments in passing, like, okay, what are we going to do today? Let's go outside and do something. And he'll say, okay, we'll go take a walk. We'll go, you know, we'll go to the movies. And then, you know, it's 5 o'clock by that time, and nothing's happened. And I get upset. And
yeah, but see, you're not talking over the real problem.
Right. You need to pull down your blouse and say, I got your controllers right here.
What you need to talk over.
What you don't see is what Louise just did.
Whoopsie.
Sorry.
Never mind. Yes,
go ahead,
Diane.
Diane, try to be serious.
Well, I mean, it's obvious. You're not talking about what needs to be talked over. You're spending 18 hours a day in front of this set, and it's ruining not only your job prospects, but our relationship. you know, that's the conversation you're not having. How come, Jen?
I don't know. I guess because it's new, because I just moved in with him, and I don't want to...
She's scared.
I don't know.
She's
it's hard scared. When you first move in with somebody. You don't really want to ruffle feathers.
So here's, Jen, here's an easy way to do this. If you start the sentences with the word you, you're going to be accusing him whether you intend to or not, and he's going to react defensively. If you start the sentences with I really need this with you. I really expected we'd have more time together. I really want to spend more time with you. And it hurts me when you say we're going to go for a walk, and then next thing we know, it's like after dark, and you haven't even gotten up yet. I need to know that when you make a promise to me like that, that we're going to do it and have that kind of a conversation with him. That will disarm him and not make him so defensive and get you a better answer out of him.
And it's okay to be direct.
Yeah.
It really is okay. He's not going to run.
And you have to ask for what you want rather than what he should be doing. Does that make sense?
No, that totally makes sense.
Okay, because if it comes from what you want, it's easy for him to be the knight in shining armor and run to your rescue and get you what you want. But if you say, I need you to be different, then he's going to get defensive, even if you're right, because his ego is going to get in the way and defend his position.
Oh, okay.
Boy, I just learned something, too. So I need you to take out that smelly trash is going to work a lot better than how come you never take out the trash?
And you know what's even better?
Diane's learning.
Yeah, what's even better is the damsel in distress. Honey, I'm so tired of smelling that icky trash. Would you be my hero and take it out for me? And you know, then he goes, da-da-da!
Puts on his trash man cape.
All sorts of new language here. Oh, but Jen, do you hear the underlying lesson here? You need
to
say, and you should want to say what's important to you.
Exactly. You have to ask for what you need in a relationship. And since you've just started, Jen, now is the time, because if you set the precedent of not asking for what you want, it just gets harder and harder to do that as time goes on.
And he digs a deeper and deeper dent in the couch.
Yeah. Good luck with that. And you know what? If the situation doesn't change in a month, I might rethink my living arrangements, Jen. But hey, that's just me. Good luck.
Wow. Nice closer, Diane. Have a good life.
And if all else fails, you can try Louise's.
Yeah.
The thing with the blouse. Oopsie daisy.
Oopsie daisy. Yeah. All right. Thanks for calling, Jen. Really appreciate it. Is she gone? Okay.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
wow.
These young kids who move in together and, you know, God bless them, but it's hard. And I guess nobody sits down anymore ahead of time and says, okay, we've been dating for a year. We're going to move in together. How are we going to make this work?
Exactly.
Let's talk about things. They just do it.
And, you know, it's not just young kids. I got married later in life. And some of the things she was describing could have been my wife telling her to say them, because there are many nights my wife says, let's go take a walk and watch the sunset or something. And I say, sure, just a minute, let me finish this email. And then it's dark and cold outside by the time I finish the email. And she looks at me disappointed. And while it's rude of me to ignore that, it's also up to her. And this is the 50-50 in a relationship. Or like my brother's future father-in-law said to him on the eve of his wedding, marriage is a 60-60 proposition, because each person has to give more than they think they have to give. And this, the other half of that is, she's got to say, I really want to take a walk now. Can we please? That's different, you know, than sitting back in a demure way and waiting for me to finish my email and then being all huffy with me when the sun's already set and the opportunity's passed.
Hey, we've got a great email in the Talk It Over email box. Russ in Los Angeles writes, hey guys, my conflict is simple. The longtime love of my life loves Leno. I'm a Letterman kind of guy. Neither of us wants to give up the late night funny man. So how do we talk it over and reach a compromise? I'm tired of falling asleep on the couch by myself. Yikes. How do you talk that over?
Jimmy Kimmel.
Two televisions. Separate headsets.
Oh, that could be. Yeah, that could be. Or maybe instead just take a walk, go outside, and forget the television late at night.
Well, you know, there are a couple things. You know, the other thing is if they do have separate TVs in separate rooms, there's nothing wrong with going and watching in separate rooms and then getting reunited after the show is over.
Well, we're coming up to half past the hour. Stay with us here on Talk It Over. More of your personal conflicts and, of course, more of our outstanding advice on how to solve them. Stay with us. But you know how it is. No matter what I
did, we gotta talk it over. If you'd like to be part of the Talk It Over family, call 888-531-7171 anytime or send us an email to talkitover@gmail.com.
Are Talk It Over, solving the world's problems two people at a time, here with Diane Diamond and Lee J. Berman, our producers Matt Sigman and Patricia. Does she want us to use her last name?
Producer Trish.
Yes,
we have a new. We don't want the stalkers on her. You know, you start giving.
Yeah, exactly.
She's so cute. You know,
we have a new intern today.
We do?
Yeah, intern Maddie. So,
hey, Maddie.
Yeah, we're all on deck, and we're solving the world's problems.
So every time we call Maddie, Engineer Matt looks up because we've started calling him Maddie.
He's gotten like, a little too used to that.
How dare you hire an intern with the same name as mine? Yeah. How dare you?
We're going to have to rename one of us. I just haven't figured out which one yet. But and then coincidentally, wonderfully, we have a caller on the line who is named Matt. Hello, Matt.
Oh, my gosh.
We love it, Matt.
Hello, guys. I'm listening to you in Fresno and a big fan.
So oh, good. You. Good, good, good. How can we help you? What's going on with you?
I've been in investment banking for the last 7 years and simultaneously doing stand-up comedy at night. And next year, I'm getting married to my lovely fiance, but the day job thing is just too much of a strain. And I'm at the point in my life where I'd really like to just, you know, pursue what I've always wanted to do, and that's comedy full-time. But, you know, I have a mortgage and a new bride, so I got to resolve that conflict.
Does she work?
She does.
Mm-hmm. And with stand-up comedy and her salary, you wouldn't be able to make a go of it in a little studio apartment somewhere? Just you crazy kids making your way in the world?
Possibly. I have a condo that's one bedroom, and I think, you know, right now she's a doctor, but she's a resident, so they make minimum wage but work, you know, 80-plus hours. So it's possible, but it would be a struggle.
Let me ask you this. With her family and your family, is there a lot of pressure on the guy that wants to be a stand-up comedian that's just silliness, or why would you want to do that? You're an investment banker. You've got a good job. You've got a good head on your shoulder. You've got a good future. Why are you trying to get up on stage and make yuck-yucks? What's happening? Is there a lot of judgment?
I think a lot of it's with me. I mean, yeah, there are some with our family, but I think more of it's just on myself. It's like I've done pretty well, you know, from college till now, and I think giving up the security is an issue I'd have a bigger problem with than they would. I mean, they've always been supportive, but I've never really like been totally downtrodden. So it's tough to say.
Matt, let me ask you this: she's a resident, and how long does that last until she's a full-fledged doc?
She'll have 3 more years.
Okay, so this is
a full. I mean, she'll have an actual, you know, she's a doctor now, but then she'll be like on her own.
Got it. Okay. I was just wondering if maybe her income is going to drastically increase at some point, but 3 years is a long time to put off your dream.
Yeah. Yeah. It will, but it'll be 3 years away.
Let me ask you this, just since we're brainstorming. Is there anything that you can do using your investment bank knowledge that isn't a full-time job, consulting or day trading, or, I mean, something that's responsible that will bring income in during the days and still allow you to focus on your passion?
I haven't really pursued that avenue. I mean, there's some accounting work. I'm not an accountant by trade.
No.
And right now, the financial world is a little in disarray. So
not a good time to make a change.
To answer your question, I'm sure there's something. And just off the top of my head, I can't think of a option. But with temp work, I'd imagine there's something I could do.
So who would you like to talk this over with? How can we help you talk it over? Do you want to talk with your wife about it, or are you just talking to yourself about whether you should make this jump or not?
Well, I want to talk to my fiance about it, but first I just, you know, it's more internal. I just want to come to grips with what I want to do. I think just verbalizing it has helped. You know, you guys there have all diverse backgrounds. I mean, is there any times when you've left one line of work to pursue something else, and how did that turn out?
Well, you know, I was a mediator once, and then I decided to start a radio show.
Oh, well, that's just silliness.
You're still a mediator.
Of course.
You know, Matt, I have always worked in the very demanding profession of journalism. And I went from radio to television to print. And when I made the transition to television, it became a thing for my family, my daughter, my new husband, that I was gone a lot. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't anything that I could sit down and talk it over with them ahead of time because I didn't know. There were so many unknowns. You know, what news story is going to break out where? I have to go to Kansas, California, Miami. You know, I know I live in New York, but I have to go to Washington today. And so I think with your situation, it's more predictable. If you leave the investment banking and you go into comedy, well, Louise Palenker, you run some comedy clubs all up and down California there.
I'm not hiring
this guy. You don't make much money doing that. So you can predict, Matt, that the conversation with your fiance is going to have to go something like this. Honey, my heart isn't in investment banking. I want to be a stand-up comedian, but I'm not going to make a lot of money doing that. You don't make a lot of money for three more years, so mm-hmm. something's got to give. You know, maybe it is that you don't get married right now. That's okay. going to be – that's the strain point.
The strain point is the relationship. I have to be honest with you, Matt. I did switch – I got my credential in teaching, and I was substitute teaching, and I knew I don't want to do this. I love kids, but I don't want to do this. I want to go into the entertainment field. I moved from suburban Buffalo to Los Angeles. I knew nobody, and I've quickly figured out that you have to start as an intern. You have to mm-hmm. really basically give it away before people are going to be willing to pay for it. And I was not in a relationship, and so I was able to do that. And I was able to forge a career in the entertainment industry that way through internships, which are absolutely invaluable. And now in comedy, it is an internship. You're basically getting on stage for free. This I know. I know the comedy field very well.
Oh, yeah.
And you spend about 10 years performing for nothing. It's like mm-hmm. the longest internship in life, really. But it's comedy only begins the moment you step on a stage. It's not like you can practice in the basement like a violin. You can't practice until the moment you first step out on stage. It's a relationship between you and the audience, and it is a huge commitment. It's going to have to be something that you and your fiance agree is what's going to happen, so that she can't 3 years down the road say, "This is not what I signed on for."
You know, I have to. We have to salute Matt for the way he's thinking, though, because I've got to say, we get so many calls on this show from young people who are in relationships who are all about me, me, me. I want to do this, and my wife doesn't. What's wrong with her? Instead of
right.
what Louise just said, which is, and what Matt has called us to say, I feel responsible to this new life that I'm starting with her. I want to do the right thing for us, and is trying to find a way to make it make sense rather than, you know, doing what he might do if he were single and unattached and just sort of jump into this thing with all of his heart and soul and live in that studio apartment Diane was talking about. But the way he's approaching this from an us place rather than a me place already tells me that he's destined to have a good marriage.
Absolutely.
Wow,
so, Matt, have we shed any help you focus on who to talk it over with, how to talk it over with, and what's going to happen if you decide to leave investment banking and go into comedy full time?
You certainly have helped, yes, without a doubt.
All right. Well, good. Please keep us. Let us know where we can come see you live, and we'll be very supportive.
Yeah. And you can contact Louise on her MySpace.
Come on up to Santa Barbara. Sure, we'd love to have you.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Matt.
Thanks for calling, Matt.
Bye bye.
Yeah. Good luck. If you've got a conflict, even if it is just with yourself, and you need a little sounding board, little advice, give us a call here at Talk It Over. We're 888-531-7171. 888-531-7171. If you don't get through, just leave us a message, and we'll play your voicemail message back, and then we'll talk to you that way.
I think that'd be excellent. I'm loving that plan. You know, and go ahead, Diane.
I was going to say, another way that our listeners can communicate with us is over email. And we've got an email from Martha in Springfield, Missouri. She says, I like this one. I work in a small accounting firm with only 7 other people. Our cubicles are all part of one big room, so there isn't a lot of privacy. One of my coworkers has allergies that cause her to sniff and snort and blow her nose all day long. Ooh, it drives the rest of us crazy. Around the lunch table, we try to suggest remedies for her, but she's the martyr type that says, oh, I'll just tough it out. What she really needs is a good medical specialist. How do we talk it over with her to get her there? Our insurance would pay for it.
Can you get, you know, those sneeze guards they have over the salad bar? Could you install that
over the cubicle?
Yeah, right over the cubicle.
There you go.
And then you could also have some pinto beans. Or, you know, some nice greens. Yes. I enjoy, like, those tiny little raisins, you know, that they have. The ones that taste like bacon.
Well, look.
Salad bar. Yeah. Lee's looking at me like, what the heck are you talking about? This girl is sneezing, and you have tiny bacon pieces in your sentence.
Louise, what? You've thread-jacked the email. You
have thread-jacked
to a salad bar somewhere in the San Fernando Valley.
I haven't heard that before, but I love that, thread-jacked. That's wonderful.
Yes, she thread-jacked it. Listen, we've all worked with people who drive us crazy, and when you try to help them, oh, no, I'll just do it myself. I'll just sit here in the dark.
Here's the problem.
How do you talk with somebody like that, Lee J?
The problem is exactly what you just said, Diane. When you try to help them, you don't get the response you want. You're trying to help somebody, Martha in Springfield, Missouri. You're trying to help someone who doesn't want to be helped. Who you're not trying to help, who you're falling down on and failing, is yourself.
Sneeze guard.
Bacon bits.
You have to stand up and say, this is what I need. It's hard for me to listen to the sniffling all day and everything. Is there anything that you can do or that we can offer to help or, you know, that insurance would cover or anything? Because it's getting bothersome to us.
Because you're driving me crazy.
Yes.
I think, absolutely. Humor is great for stuff like this. Like, oh, my God, when are you going to stop doing that? You're making me nuts. I love you.
All right, but wait, humor caution, because what? You're a professional comedian. Your timing is exquisite. Your level of intervention with humor is wonderful. Most folks walk around making mistakes with humor, and they can hurt feelings. They can start a whole thing that they didn't need to start. So, yeah, humor's good, but only if you know that you're good at it and with a lot of caution.
So it sounds mean-spirited. It comes off.
Whenever you make a joke with somebody about a habit of theirs, there's no way to avoid it being at them or about them or like you're laughing at them. And that's a difficult place to go if you're trying to get them to do something for you.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay, but yeah. Definitely.
All right, so Martha, you got it? Don't go to a salad bar with her and have this conversation. Oh, wait, I got all confused. Hey, we got another email. This one is from Marie in Provo, Utah. She says, oh, this is very interesting. This is about parenting. I like this. My 13-year-old son always says that he'll do this or that chore by the end of the day, but he hardly ever does it. It gets late. There's important homework to do before his bedtime. Sometimes the whole week goes by and the newspaper recycles doesn't get taken out or the lawn doesn't get mowed. My boy is not a liar, but he makes these heartfelt promises he just doesn't keep. How do I talk it over with him to help him become a better person, someone people can trust?
Wow, she's got the answer right in the question, doesn't she?
Yep, she's a good mom for thinking of that. Because Marie Provo.
She's not thinking selfishly. He won't mind me.
Oh my God, it's Marie Osmond.
She's got eight kids.
She
listens.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. Hi, Marie. Thanks for listening. But she's got the right idea. She has to talk to him about why this is not just about the garbage or the recycled newspapers, but why it's about him, his promises to the world, and that the only thing you have in this world that nobody can take away from you is your word.
Mm-hmm.
And that he has to be more cautious that when he gives his word, he has to live up to it, and that this is the time to start forming those habits because he'll be judged by that later in life and won't have friends and won't get a job and won't be successful in all this if his word is not worth anything.
Boy, that is really, I'm very impressed with that mother looking ahead like that, because if your word is your bond and people can't trust what you say, they're going to discard you as a friend or a worker or as somebody to confide in. So that's really nice that she's looking ahead like that.
And I like Marie's approach too, because she wants to sit him down and basically say, look, I'm in charge of coaching you to be a better grown-up. And as a parent, I'm seeing this happen, and I need for you to know it's going to be a problem. So it's my job to say, look, you just can't keep going through life this way. You have to be...
Does he really care? does 13 do you I think you have to do something more immediate, because 13-year-olds are all about sort of like immediate gratification. It has to be like, you know what? No, you're not doing anything.
So you take his iPhone away, and then you tell him.
No video games, no iPhone, no TV.
I don't know. I think I disagree with
you,
Louise. I don't think so, because, you know, there are things that pop up in my mind that my mother told me when I was 15 years old, that when she told me, I was rolling my eyes, like, yeah, Mom, I can't stand you.
Yeah.
But I still remember them. And so as a parent, that's you got to do it. You got to say, this is it. And then if it continues, then she takes the recycle and she puts it on his bed.
Right.
So that he can't sleep until he takes it.
I'm not saying she doesn't have the conversation with him about honor, because that is something he will hear when he's 17. He'll remember it, but he doesn't want to hear it. He's not about hearing it right now. He's about rolling his eyes, but I love the trash on the bed.
And see, the problem, problem I have with that is it makes it about the trash, and he may go, okay, Mom needs me to take the trash out, but he doesn't learn the lesson. Because the next day he'll say, yeah, Mom, I'll clean my room, and he won't clean his room.
But why can't we do both?
You can.
Yeah.
You can.
Marie,
you got to talk it over with him. Exactly.
Do both. All right. There's another email here. Okay, I was lying. There's no email. It's from me. It's from me.
Oh,
I have a problem.
Wait, you're Dee Dee in suburban New York?
Yeah, I'm Dee Dee in suburban New York.
Yes.
Dear Talk
You emailed us.
Oh, God.
I love it.
My next door neighbor is a deer. I love her to pieces. Her husband's okay, too. But they had some erosion and some structural damage to their house up on the hill. Next door. And the work on their house has been going on for 4 months. I'm talking bulldozers at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm talking stonemasons with a big saw up there cutting flagstone at 7:30 in the morning, because that's what our local ordinance says you can do.
Right.
Their landscapers are all, I mean, it's driving me crazy. What do I say to this woman? At least to have them maybe start later in the day?
What time are they starting?
7:30. Well,
sometimes as early as 7:30.
Is there a city ordinance about what?
Yeah, 7:30. And Diane, I so empathize with you, because we are in exactly the same position. Where I live with my wife, we've had literally the same stonemasons outside our window at 7:30 every
literally
morning.
The same as Diane's?
Well, maybe different stonemasons.
Wow. It's a long distance.
Your commuter
has long legs, yeah.
Well, with the time change, I guess they can... Okay.
But the truth is, there really isn't anything we can do. But Diane, let me drill down a little bit with you. What is it that you want to
say to her? I get it. Drill down.
Drill, baby, drill.
Drill, baby, drill. What I want to say is, Jen, honey, you know that my husband and I keep very late hours. You know, my husband is a radio anchorman on CBS radio, and he gets home weird hours. We're up until 2 o'clock in the morning. When this noise starts at 7:30 in the morning, I mean, we just get crankier and crankier as these 4 and 4.5 months tick on. Can't you please do something to have them start later in the day?
And the only thing I would insert in there that is a little bit even more aggressive is to say, you know, we go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning and we try to be quiet and not wake you up when we're awake. And I know the ordinance says it's okay for you to start, but could you help us out?
Yeah.
I think that's beautiful, yeah. Dan.
But you know what? I know what her husband's going to say. Gosh, I hope they're not listening. He's going to say, well, you know, if they start later in the day, it's just going to take more days.
That's okay.
And it's not going to be 4.5 months. It's going to be 5.5 months.
Oh, my God.
And he's got a point. So that's kind of what's kept me quiet all this time, thinking if I say anything, it's just going to make the job go longer.
Well, any idea how much longer they have? I mean, you can have that kind of conversation with them innocently without complaining. You know, how's the construction coming? Are they getting near done? What else are you having done, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Lee J, bing, bada, boom. Yeah, I think you just hit it. That's what I need to do.
So how are things going, you guys? Anyway, just wondering.
Any timetable on this? You miserable son.
I'm sorry, did you answer? I can't hear with the ringing in my ears. Say it again.
I'm sorry, the stonemason noise starting at 7:30 this morning.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. White noise, okay, Diane. I'm a huge fan.
Right.
White
that's
noise.
What I'm going to do.
Yeah,
Jake.
True.
Let's go to the caller on the line. We've got a caller who's got a situation with a dog.
Yes, we've got Ashley on the line.
Ashley.
Sorry, I just was working. I just
heard an effect. Ashley, how are you?
Fine, hi.
Good, what's going on with you? How can we help you?
Well, I have this situation because I had a dog for a couple of years, and I just moved back out to Los Angeles, and unfortunately, you know, the apartment that I was able to afford living in, I could not have the dog. So my parents offered to take care of the dog for a year while I'm here before I go back to school. And unfortunately, the dog's been having some behavioral problems at my parents' house, and my mom in particular is very upset about it and wants to get rid of the dog. And I don't have the option of keeping the dog here, and despite offering to pay for training, my mom really just doesn't want to have anything to do with it.
I wonder if they have doggy foster parents. Could you watch Fido for 4 more months till I get a new lease?
Yeah, just a few more months until I can get out of my lease, you know? I mean, I guess I'm just frustrated because I don't feel like I'm asking that much just for her to participate in going to these training classes.
Mm-hmm.
But she just acts like it's a big hassle and thinks it would be easier just to get rid of the dog entirely.
Kind of have to respect how she feels. If she's saying, I really don't want to do this, you have to hear that. And here's what happens. Sometimes when we're trying to problem solve, we get hitched on an idea that we think is the right answer and we stick to it. And we keep coming back to it. And what that does is it prevents us from thinking of other possible solutions.
Because we get stuck on, why won't this person do this for
me? Right. And so if we can let go of that, then we can sort of start with a blank slate and say, all right, you know, Mom, let's work together on this. Let's just think about it for a minute. I get that you don't want to do the obedience thing, and you know that I can't take the dog for X more months. How can we do this? What else can we do? Because you know I love the dog and I want to have the dog eventually and can't right now. But let's just think about this. You know, is there something else that we can do? And then if the two of you put your minds to it, my guess is you'll come up with 3 or 4 alternatives. Maybe there's a friend of your parents, you know, who has a big backyard and or other dogs or something like that. Or, you know,
a house
or a relative
in the country.
Or yeah. Something. Yeah. You know, Ashley, I can so feel for you because I was in a similar situation many, many years ago. And what Lee J is saying is absolutely right. I sort of did something like that with my mom, although I didn't know I was being smart at the time. And it made my mother, I said, well, what do I do with Pepper? It was our little German Shepherd. What do I do with Pepper, Mom? What should I do? And it made my mother's behavior soften to me, and she became mommy again because I was asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not manipulative at all.
No, really, Ashley.
But let me have you practice the pouty face. Go into the mirror and practice the pouty face.
You know, I find it doesn't work for me that well.
Girls are better at it.
Yeah,
because she may have drawn a line in the sand where she's just saying, I am not doing this for her.
Yeah.
And that may be that. But if you ask her to collaborate with you on solutions.
Exactly. And actually, that's why you don't hear the three of us throwing out ideas, because nobody's better suited to fix this problem and figure out the solution to it than you and your mother. You know, we don't know what the options are, but you guys do. She may say, well, you know, the Jones is down the street, something, 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 or you may find that you know somebody here in L.A. who could watch the dog for a few months, or, you know, something like that, that you guys need to come up with because you hold the answers. You just have to clear the slate.
You're stuck on that discipline school, and while that's a good idea, it's off the table, obviously.
It's not working.
So who knows somebody who's got a ranch or a big backyard or a relative or somebody? And you got to think of the dog, because if the dog already has behavior problems because his mommy, you, are gone, he's going to probably have even more if you don't pick the right place.
Mm-hmm. And
Ashley, well, that's what's difficult about it, is that part of it is that they have a dog too, and the dogs are not getting along.
Mm.
And so, you know, the reason I even brought up the idea of the obedience thing was because we could involve both the dogs in it and try to find a solution, because their dog also has some behavior problems.
But you're trying to problem solve for your mom, and
she
may not be ready to hear that.
Yeah, she probably isn't. She doesn't like to take my suggestions usually.
Well, and there's a whole territory thing there. You know, my Fido was here before your Fido came.
An only child.
You got a lot of depth to this problem, Ashley. But it all comes down to sitting down and talking it over with your mom.
Yeah. I guess I don't know how to approach it so that she won't be defensive, because every time I try to bring it up with her, she just doesn't she wants to, like, end the conversation.
How about I need help? I need some help, Mom.
Yeah.
I need to brainstorm.
Let's leave it with her now. Give her some language to use with her mom.
Exactly what Louise just said. Mom, I need some help here, and I'm not asking you to be the answer, but I'm asking you to help me because I'm out of answers, and I don't want to lose my dog. Can you help me brainstorm for a minute? Because I need your help as my mom right now. And that's usually the trigger that will invite her into the conversation in a different way.
Okay, yeah, see, I think I could try that.
Okay, great.
Bring her back to that mommydom, that mommy position, you know?
The pouty face.
Yeah.
Pouty face with the little quivering chin. Ashley, it works every time. All right, let us know what happens, Ashley.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks for your help.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, you know, something in the news this week I saw was very interesting. You know, I'm not one of those wild feminists. Louise, you aren't either, but we believe in equality and standing up for ourselves and talking it over and letting people know what we think. I have always wondered about the statistics of whether or not women really do get paid less money. Mm-hmm. For the same sort of job. And I think it happens. I've seen it with television reporters and anchor. You know, the anchor man always makes X numbers of dollars.
Oh, it happens.
And the anchor woman always makes a little less. It's never been fair.
For sure.
But here is some empirical evidence I have read about. There was a study done of people who had undergone sex changes. And they did a whole big long study, not only their physical beings, but their economic status. And the men who changed sexes and became women suffered overall a 33% pay cut.
But they had more drinks bought for them at bars.
They didn't need
that
the money.
That is true. Yes, but they had to spend more on their wardrobe
and makeup. And, yeah.
You see? But isn't that interesting? These people, as men, there was a former professor, for example, at Ann Arbor University in Michigan, who decided, Julie Nemec was the name, once known as John, became Julie in 2006. And the minute that she did that, the evangelical university where she worked voided her contract, gave her a new one, and it was 20% lower in salary.
Oh, my.
Now, people all over America, women all over America, Lee J. Berman, want to know, as a professional mediator, what do you tell them? What language do they go in and say to their employer, I think you're not paying me enough, and I think it's because of my sex, without making the employer all defensive?
The message that you just gave is the right message. The only thing I would do is preface it with something that's going to disarm them so they don't think that you're going to threaten a lawsuit, which, you know, I'm not saying that's the wrong thing to do in some cases, like maybe this one if we knew the rest of the context. But the idea is to walk in and say, look, I need to talk to you straight here, and I'm not, you know, threatening anything. I need you to know, let's just put all that aside. I just have to have a straight conversation with you. I don't understand why the men in the office who have less experience than I do are making more money than I am.
And or even similar experience.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm concerned.
Last week, I was a man.
But I'm concerned that it may be because I'm a woman. And if it is, then we have to talk about that. And if it's not, then I need you to explain to me what I should be doing differently or better or something. Because I deserve to be making more money than the guys with the same experience, you know, with more, you know, with less experience and so on. So disarm them first. Mm-hmm. Tell them what your concern is and own it. This is my concern. And, you know, what I just want to hear from you is there a reason for it, or, you know, is my suspicion correct? And what are we going to do about it?
Wow.
Yeah, and that alerts them that I'm watching and I'm prepared to do something about it.
Right.
And you have to pay attention. I'm not being rude. I'm not being crude. I'm not pounding my fist on the desk, but you have to address it.
And not to make any excuses for the employer, but it may be completely subconscious. And that may just wake the employer up to, hey, I better take another look at this.
Yeah, it's not subconscious. They just pay us less money. Wow. Louise, you know, you have been in that position too, I bet.
Oh, yeah, it's, you know, it's a tricky area. Men and women do not stop being men and women just because they enter the workplace. The social mores are prevalent or
that's
existent,
well said.
And we need to coexist. And that's all the time we have for today. It's been such a great show. I hate to wrap it up, but I want to thank Mediator Lee J. Berman. Diane Diamond, our intrepid reporter, producer
Thank you, Matt.
Producer Trish, intern Maddie, and our webmaster Pearson. With that, Talk It Over is over.